Welcome to Message in the Music, Black Pride and Protest in American Song. That any message song is commercially released is significant. That the music and poetry we will hear in this special achieved not only commercial success, but critical acclaim is remarkable. Some of the greatest political or message songs ever created were written and performed by African Americans. The messages, whether implicit as in gospel or explicit as in rap, decry racial violence against blacks, but the voices you'll hear also declare victory. Victory over segregation and economic deprivation. Victory over self-hate. You'll hear hope, too. Hope for harmony among all people.
Lift every voice and sing till earth and heaven ring. Ring with the harmony of liberty. Let our rejoicing rise high as the listening skies. Let it resound loud as a rolling sea.
The grand patriarch of African American message songs is Lift Every Voice and Sing. It was written and published by the Florida-born Johnson brothers, James Weldon Johnson and John Rosamond Johnson, in 1900. The lyric, written by James, cast an unflinching gaze at black people's slave past. It fixed hopeful eyes to a truly free and fulfilled future.
Let us march on to victory is
one.
Little did the Johnson brothers know that it would take over 60 years of marching on until victory was finally won. In the form of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Voting Rights Act of 1965. In 1900, the year in which Lift Every Voice and Sing was written, there are reliable, documented records of 214 African-American lynchings in the United States, mostly in the South. That's over 4 lynchings a week. 3 years after Lift Every Voice, the Harvard-educated black scholar W.E.B. Du Bois published The Souls of Black Folk in 1903. This landmark book was the first ever sociological study of black people in America. At the time he wrote and published Souls, Du Bois was a professor at Atlanta University. But the murderous lynch mobs even terrorized relatively genteel Atlanta. Here is an archival interview of the co-founder of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People.
While I was there, my faith in knowledge as a solution of the Negro problem was shaken. Lynching was common. Before I went away from there, there was an average of one lynching every week for some years. And it was a terrible sort of thing. There was one case very near Atlanta in which I knew from my studies just what had happened. It was a case of a Negro peasant not receiving his wages at the end of the season. He got in a fight with his hirer and killed him and ran away. And then when they couldn't find him, they raised the altogether new issue that he had raped the man's wife, which was evidently just dragged in. Well, I had a letter, which I hadn't delivered, to Joel Chandler Harris, the author of the Uncle Remus tales. He was then on the Atlanta Constitution. So I took that letter and started downtown to deliver it to him and to talk to him about this situation. And on the way down, I found that this Negro, Sam Hose, had been caught and lynched. and that in the meat market, which was on the way, I had to pass, his fingers and toes were being exhibited. Well, I didn't deliver the letter. I went back to Atlanta University. And then I made up my mind that knowledge wasn't enough, that even if people were ignorant of essential matters which they had to know, they wouldn't correct their actions without more realization of just what the difficulties were. They had not only to know, but they had to act.
Lynchings continued unabated in the South. Plain states and Southwest, black men, who are almost always accused of raping a white woman, were burned at the stake. In 1919, the worst race riots in Chicago's entire history exploded across the city, all because a black boy swam into the whites-only section of Lake Michigan. The boy was stoned, beaten, and drowned. 23 blacks died in the ensuing melee, and hundreds were injured. In one of the most monstrous attacks of the Jim Crow era, an entire community, Greenwood, near Tulsa, Oklahoma, was firebombed. 300 African Americans died in the inferno. National Guardsmen herded the 6,000 survivors of Greenwood into detention camps. It was May 1921, the beginning of the Jazz Age. In the relatively safe haven of Harlem, the socially aware Negro Renaissance poets such as Claude McKay railed against the rampant hate crimes.
If We Must Die is the poem that makes me a poet among colored Americans. If we must die, let it not be like hogs, hunted and penned in an inglorious pot, while round us bark the mad and hungry dogs, making their mock at our accursed lot. If we must die, oh, let us nobly die, so that our precious blood may not be shed in vain. Then even the monsters we defy shall be constrained to honor us though dead. Oh, kinsmen, we must meet the common foe. Though far outnumbered, let us show us brave, and for their thousand blows, deal one death blow. What though before us lies the open grave? Like men, we'll face the murderous, cowardly pack, pressed to the wall, dying but fighting back.
The Great Depression silenced not only message songs, but most of the recording industry. But by 1939, jazz vocalist Billie Holiday had seen one too many lynching aftermaths during her bus tours of the South. She risked her career at the peak of her popularity and sang about America's hateful practice. She had no use for nuance or subtlety. Her message was poetic but horrifically clear.
Southern trees bear a strange fruit, blood on the leaves and blood at the root. Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze. Strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees. For the wind to sigh. tree to drop.
Among the black, poor, and working classes in the South and Heartland, coda calls were more common for divine intervention against the Ku Klux Klan. Messages for help were sent flying to God from the church sanctuary. Traveling gospel quartets, such as the Southern Sons, sang songs of hope and endurance, which transparently compare the torments of Jews under Pharaoh in biblical times to black suffering under Jim Crow. Even the great Marian Anderson used gospel as a coded message for African Americans to hold on.
Let my people
go down, Moses,
way down in Egypt.
Tell them, Pharaoh, why don't you let my people go? I'm singing, go down, Moses,
way down in Egypt.
Why don't you let my people go? When Israel was in Egypt land, oppressed so hard they could not stand, the Lord told Moses what to do, to lead the children of Israel through. And then they go down, Brother Moses,
way down in Egypt land.
Why don't you let my people go? T'was good old Moses and Aaron too, t'was they that led the army through. And now come along, Moses, you not get lost, so stretch out your rod and come across. Then go down, Brother Moses,
way down in Egypt land.
Tell them, Pharaoh, why don't you let my people go?
Go down, Moses, way down in Egypt land.
Oh.
As the twin eras of rock and roll and civil rights dawned in the 1950s, the message and the messengers in gospel became more youthful and energetic. Sam Cooke, barely 20 years old, led the way with the Soul Stirrers. Listen to I'm So Glad Trouble Don't Last Always. Clearly, the sinner who better run is not simply a backsliding Christian. The word sinner also is a coded reference to hateful segregationists.
Well, you know I'm so glad. I know the trouble don't last always. Oh,
I'm so glad.
So glad. I know trouble don't last always. Lord, I'm so glad.
Run, old sinner, run. You better find you a hiding place. You better run. Run, sinner, run. You better find you a hiding place. Lord, run. Run, old sinner, run. You better find you a hiding place. Oh, my Lord. Yeah, Lord. Oh, what shall I do?
You promised me, Lord, you'd be my friend now. You promised me, Lord, you'd stay right beside me. I'm so glad, so glad, Lord.
Sam Cooke's A Change Is Gonna Come was the first overt civil rights movement anthem written by an African American.
Somebody keep telling me don't hang around.
Cooke's Chicago protege, Curtis Mayfield of the Impressions, picked up the baton after Sam's tragic murder in December 1964 with We're a Winner a few years later.
Mind is in your way. No more tears, do we cry? And we have finally tried our eyes. And we're moving on up.
After Congress enacted the Voting Rights Act of 1965, the civil rights movement really did wonder, where do we go from here, to use the question asked by the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King at the time. The younger generation of blacks were impatient and angry. Their resentment over intractable urban poverty and white backlash from city police forces and the National Guard exploded into riots in Watts, Detroit, and Newark, New Jersey. To the dismay of civil rights advocates, the nonviolent movement had conflagrated into a very violent black power movement. Then on April 4, 1968, an assassin's high-powered rifle blast felled Dr. King in Memphis. America's best hope for a peaceful resolution to our racial strife, the drum major for justice, was gone. Into Black America's burning neighborhoods stepped a singer best known for his overwrought stage shows and dance music, James Joseph Brown.
There were a few cultural figures who were dominant enough with their voices and had outreach enough to try to make some impact. I mean, people were going in their anger and frustration from reacting to genocide to suicide and self-destruction. And those who had voices to reach them, who had the courage to do so, did reach out. But James did not just say, please don't riot. He tried to turn some net pain into, as it were, burn, baby, burn, to build, baby, build.
Came out with the song Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud. That was something that every black person related to. And I think that even those people that were not of African descent felt a sense of a pride, black, white, red, yellow, brown, because it was a song that says, yes, and you should be proud to be what you are.
You're listening to Message in the Music, Black Pride and Protest in American Song, we have to take a short break. Stay with us for the second half of the special. The music of James Brown, Nina Simone, Stevie Wonder, Public Enemy, and Kanye West carries black consciousness from the late 60s into the early 21st century.
Ain't it funky now? Yeah.